Hello, and welcome to the Search Web Services podcast, Why the ESB Matters in SOA. My name is Michael Meehan. I'm editor at searchwebservices.com, and today I'm speaking with Dave Rosenberg, CEO at MuleSource. How you doing today, Dave?
I'm doing great, Michael. Thanks for asking.
For those of you who don't know, Dave's company puts out the Mule Enterprise Service Bus, so an open source enterprise service bus. And, you know, Dave actually wrote to us recently about some talk in the industry about, well, you know, how much attention should you be paying to your enterprise service bus as opposed to your overarching SOA plan. Dave obviously has an enterprise service bus to talk about, so I'm going to throw it to him. Dave, why does the ESB matter in SOA?
Well, you know, the ESB really is the functional core of the SOA, and I think what we were, what I was writing to you about was that there was a lot of talk about the human side of SOA and, you know, sort of ignoring the fact that eventually you do have to put technology in place. And arguably, the human side of getting processes built and getting your staff on board the SOA bus is extremely difficult. Ultimately, you have to make a decision. And in order to build a house, you build the foundation. You don't put the windows in first. And I think that that's why, you know, fundamentally to us, the ESB is so important because it is the foundation for the SOA.
And how so? When you say it is the foundation for the SOA specifically, what it does an ESB or what should an ESB do that an SOA can rely upon, that you can, you know, use as a foundational part of your SOA?
Yeah, well, I mean, I think if you apply sort of traditional software stack analysis, the SOA is the middle layer of the service-oriented architecture. But SOA relies upon this sort of middle layer much more than perhaps traditional applications do. And so if you sort of abstract it to very basic levels, you would have BPM sitting on top of your ESB, and below that you might have databases and app servers and things of that nature. But fundamentally, it seems sort of counterintuitive and even somewhat absurd to suggest that you would have an SOA without an ESB in place, as it has always been sort of defined as the core of how you would build an architecture this way.
So basically integration is a fact of life then?
Sadly, yes. It always has been, and I think it always will be, which is, you know, good for us, of course. But, you know, what's interesting is when you start to look at the SOA sort of approaches and you look at what people are doing to kind of get even halfway there. So if we take, for example, let's say you don't have the ability or need to do something like BPM, but you want to have service enablement, how would you accomplish that? You would accomplish that using the ESB. And as we continue to see even, you know, work going on around new designs and whatever else, system architecture, we start to see that the principles of SOA make a lot more sense, but fundamentally you're still integrating things. And that's, I think, the missing, perhaps that's the man behind the curtain. And on the other hand, it might just be too obvious that that's actually what we're doing here.
And there's talk of integration versus mediation, that, you know, integrate what you have to, but in the future look to mediate between services. Does that terminology mean much to you from where you're coming from? You know, do you see a strict difference between integration and mediation?
So I would say, you know, in the past, that definitely has existed. I would say that the design of the ESB should support both. And so from our perspective, we have users who are doing, you know, sort of straight-ahead integration as well as mediation, as well as a combination of the two. And that's where I think the sweet spot is for these types of products. And it also depends, it sort of leads into the flexibility of the solution that you've chosen for the ESB.
Now, ESBs come in pretty much all shapes and sizes these days. In fact, we've spent no small amount of time trying to define just what the heck an ESB is, and usually we come down to the, well, it's a lot of different things and you need to be careful. My question to you is, what shouldn't an ESB do, in your opinion? What don't you want in there?
Well, So let me just kind of preface this with that. I came from a technical background of large-scale system architecture. And I believe in layers of abstraction in terms of functionality, and all sort of have always been taught that way. So I think things that we start to see pushed into the ESB, like BPM, or even sort of quasi-BAM type stuff, may or may not make sense. I would argue that it probably doesn't. I mean, perhaps as a sort of a module aside the ESB, it makes sense. But to me, things like BPM and registry and governance and stuff like that, those should all be sort of, you know, pieces of the puzzle when you build your Lego house. And the other side of that is that what we're seeing a lot of is one of the big reasons people are adopting Mule is because it's about 35 megs to get the whole thing up and running. And so we have, I would say at this point, probably better than 60% of our users are running Mule standalone, just on a box. No app server, no anything else, none of that sort of extraneous SOA, either good or bad, fluff. But, you know, the fact that you can solve this problem with a really sort of lightweight mechanism is pretty appealing to a very large audience.
And what is it you think that the ESB, at least for you, what is the core functionality in that ESB? What are the things that it's got to be able to do to be enterprise grade?
Well, obviously it needs to be able to pass messages from one place to another. I think the biggest thing is the ESB has to not just be about services, even though that's the theoretical behind it, that we want it to be all about services. But you have to be able to support protocols, various applications. You have to be able to support APIs of different types. I mean, this to me is also part of the argument as to why it makes perfect sense for an ESB to be open source, is that ultimately every company has their own stuff that they've written, right? So you've got a custom app, and how do you get that custom app to integrate with something? Let's say for the sake of argument that it's never going to be services enabled, right? But perhaps you could get some sort of, for the sake of argument, you know, an EJB call, or maybe you could write your own crazy protocol. You need to be able to have that functionality in the bus to be able to support any type of application, because the enterprise is still a hodgepodge. I mean, you're not ever going to find an organization that's 100% services enabled, just like you're not going to find an organization that's 100% Linux or 100% Windows or whatever else. And so for me, the functionality is sort of a subset of the ability to communicate via any channel.
And let me ask you about what you're seeing on the user end, you know, after these people download Mule.
Sure.
How many of them are using, at least in your opinion, the ESB for strategic purposes, as part of a project to, you know, make those components reusable in the future, as opposed to those who are sort of going in and doing basically newfangled EAI, you know, glue together tactical sort of projects?
The new school EAI is definitely, it's definitely still there. I mean, I think the what we're seeing a lot of is that people are kind of solving this technical problem, right? I've got a new app that needs to come online, and they're trying to future-proof, I guess, and kind of make a strategic decision about having the ability to have it be service-enabled and/or, you know, sort of accessible through another mechanism. I would say that probably roughly half of our users are doing greenfield projects, so a new app that needs to come into the backbone. And they want to, as I said, use a mechanism that allows them to future-proof it. So I think we're probably 50-50. I would also say that there's a lot of, when you get involved in specific industry verticals, you start to run into problems with specific things. For example, the financial services guys, they like the concept of web services, but a lot of times you can't get the throughput that you need, right? So they'll want to do some sort of different, you know, transaction protocol to do that.
And actually, let me ask you, associated with all of that, you know, sometimes you hear people say, well, you know, people are doing web services / SOA projects, but it's all sort of, you know, formative, small project, not much lines of business associated with that. Are you finding that to be true in your experience, or are people really, you know, betting money on these applications?
People are betting the whole hog, no question. I think what we've seen so far, there's only been a few really sort of successful, I don't know if you call them successful, but sort of finished SOA projects so far. There's a lot of guys who are in process now, but I mean, it's open source and SOA initiatives are in almost every industry at this point, and pretty significant. I mean, government, financial services, telecom, everywhere. We're seeing just enormous uptake in places, and multiple hundreds to even multiple thousands of servers being deployed as part of the SOA initiatives. Now, I think what's interesting, and I think, you know, time will tell, that there's certain pieces that people seem to be really interested in, and there's certain pieces that the vendors, sort of the larger proprietary vendors, push because they sell for a lot of money. And for the first, I'd say for the last maybe 2 years or roughly a year and a half or so ago, the vendors made this enormous push into BPM. And all these people bought BPM and realized, well, hey, this looks cool, but I'm doing point-to-point integration. And so that's, I think, been a big challenge. I mean, there was a fairly sizable setback in the marketplace from this approach of forcing things like BPM and getting obsessed with governance and registry and whatever else, when you didn't really have the infrastructure in place to even take advantage of it. And that's, I think, is where we're just now starting to make that change, where BPM is becoming applicable because people have put stuff into place that you can actually leverage that for. But I mean, I can tell you there's a large company here in San Francisco that provides, I'll tell you what, they provide the large amount of power for all the state of California, who have a big BPM implementation. And it's all point to point. You know, it's point and click, point to point, but they didn't really solve the SOA problem. I mean, I would tell you that their vendor forced them into this whole thing to try and make life easier. And in the long run, in another year, they're going to have to rewrite it all. Right? Because there is no governance. There is no registry of services. There is no bus. It's using an app server and a bunch of point-to-point. And so I think this is a big problem. And I tell you, there are certain places that got more burned by that than others. In Japan, for example, there was an enormous push for BPM by guys, as I said, the large proprietary vendors. And now there's a huge, huge pushback on SOA, as well as, you know, BPM is like a bad word to go into a Japanese SI at this point. Very interesting.
I've heard it said that, you know, at least when you're thinking in terms of SOA, that whole, you know, that line between two boxes is definitively not an SOA sort of idea, that you need to, you know, be able to take multiple lines from that box and send them wherever. Do you find, I guess what you're saying is a lot of people sort of got trapped into that one-way trip.
Yeah, and I mean, I think this kind of goes back to this, the whole idea of this expense, putting this expense into SOA and, you know, contemplating whether or not is that expense really about the software, or is it the expense about the fact that the process was not right and a vendor came in and tells you this is going to solve sort of half of your process, give me all your money, and then you're sort of, what happens now? I didn't actually solve the problem. I only band-aided it further. And then you get the vendor that comes back in and says, okay, to get it right, it's going to cost you another $1 million. And that seems to be the trend. I mean, you know, the joke about these large vendors, about these SOA initiatives and SOA products is that you say, okay, here's $4 million, and then an army of consultants show up with a bunch of CDs, right? And then you walk out, those guys leave, and you're stuck with this infrastructure that may or may not do exactly what you needed to do, but it cost you a hell of a lot of money, and your people probably aren't even, they're probably not even aligned with it.
Would you say it's fair that even before I, sit down and use an open source ESB, I probably makes sense to understand what I'm going to be using it for, as opposed to having, part of the picture, understand where this fits into the large picture?
Oh, definitely. I mean, the advantage of the open source ESB is you just go download it and use it. You don't have to go through a 2-month sales cycle with some proprietary vendor. So I can give you an example that when before I started MuleSource, I was CIO of a small financial services firm, and we contacted literally every vendor in hopes of trying to get an ESB into place. And, 2 or 3 weeks would take them to get back to us to even give us a demo version. And then it was, well, how about if we come out for 3 weeks and do a proof of concept? So it just, kind of defeats the whole purpose. If you're a developer, you just want access to the stuff and you want to go do it. Now, fundamentally, you still need to know, your goal, right, your end goal. But the advantage of the open source option is, I download it and I use it. And if I like it and I want to get support and I want to get the tools and whatever else, then I become a subscriber. I don't have to pay this enormous upfront fee to even get down that path to start my development. I think that that's the biggest thing.
Okay. And one last question. What's the most creative use you've seen of an ESB out there? What's the one thing that, if somebody said, hey, tell me something really cool you saw somebody do with an ESB, what would that be?
Oh, there's lots of them. The most sort of visually appealing is, if you're a baseball fan, all of MLB.com, all the statistics for all the baseball games come running through Mule.
Okay.
And it's very cool. And then they're using, actually, it's a lot, pretty sophisticated usage as well, because they wrote their own REST components and some other interesting things. But literally every baseball game that gets played in the U.S., in Mexico, in Japan, all over the place, all the data comes through Mule and is visualized in these very cool interfaces on MLB.com.
That does sound cool.
It is cool. Yeah, absolutely.
All right. Well, hey, thank you very much. Once again, we've been speaking with Dave Rosenberg, CEO at MuleSource, and the topic of the conversation has been why the ESB matters in SOA. Hope you've enjoyed the Search Web Services podcast, and have a good day. Thank you again, Dave.